Okay, so
I've seen Blake. I run a company called Respondability. It's called Respondability because it's about the ability to respond how you want to, rather than just have a feeling that overtakes you, a thought or a feeling that overtakes you. I think we can all associate with that, and that's probably why you're here anyway, is that sometimes you just have a feeling that comes on and suddenly we're anxious or frightened or we feel angry, and it's happened before we've actually worked out why we're any of those. And so that's what this is about today. It's about giving you the chance to actually say, I don't want to feel that way. Now, in most instances, when something comes on, it's too late. So if you suddenly feel angry or anxious or whatever, you've now pumped a load of chemicals around the system to actually deal with that threat. And whilst those chemicals are in your system, you feel like that. So techniques such as breathing or, you know, doing a bit of physical exercise or whatever might actually take the edge off it, but you're still full of all those chemicals. Right, sorry, I should have said before I started, I do a recording of all these events, so if you feel that there's lots of things covered and you'd like to hear it again, all you need to do is leave me your email address and I will actually post you the link to the recordings. Okay. Right, so, I just want you to do something first. We'll get you all interactive at the beginning, and at the end we're going to do a wonderful technique that you'll all love. So, mind and body are not separate in any way, shape, or form. We all know if we cut our head off, then the body dies instantly. But it's more interactive than anybody thinks, because our thoughts affect everything that we do. And the bad thoughts, which is mainly the things I talk about, because I've never had anybody yet to come to see me say, I'm full of joy, can you remove it, please? That doesn't work. It's alright, we've got cars ready. Okay. The only reason that bothered me is because I'm trying to thought I often lose it. And I've just lost it. I have somebody that actually prompts me. But she's so interested, she has to be next one. So. Okay. So, right, okay. So, our body and mind are interactive. Everything we say to ourselves, every cell in our body hears it. And I'm going to demonstrate it to you now myself, but I'm going to do a little demonstration first. You see somebody on a telephone call, and you just see them pick up the phone from the other side of the room, and they go, you now know they've had bad news, right? This is not good news. Nobody reacts like that in good news. This is a universal thing. How your body works, we all smile the same way up, wherever we are in the world. It's the way our body is learned to react and actually socialise with other people. If, however, you see somebody take the phone call to the other side of the room and they go, right? You know it's good news. And yet, although that's exaggerated, that's exactly what we do every time we talk to ourselves and give ourselves bad information. Well, I'm fat, I'm ugly, I'm not worth it. Any of those things that you say to yourself actually go around the whole of your body because you make chemicals to actually react to the things that you're thinking about. Right? So we're a wonderful chemical factory. Once you can tap into it, you don't need drugs or drink or anything. You can just be happy all the time. You can actually make the choice of how you want to feel for the circumstances. And if you're happy all the time, that's a little bit over the top because things do happen to us that sometimes make you sad. And it's about the ability to actually stay in that for a relevant amount of time, but not be locked into it. So today's talk is about escaping the past. And I can't think of any, apart from people who worry about the future, virtually everybody I see and help is because there's something in the past. So let's talk about past, present, and future. So if we think about past, when we think about the past, it's not there anymore. It no longer exists. But if we're in the present, thinking about the past. We make it exist, but we're moving it from the past to the present. So if we think about something sad in the past, we take that feeling from the past and we now refresh it and bring it to us in the present. But it's just a thought. It literally is just a thought. Now, everything in this room, including you, started as a thought. The you bit is, Dad went, feeling a bit frisky tonight. That's a thought, right? That's how you started. So everything starts as a thought. So the beams in here, everything that's man-made, started off with somebody saying, well, that'd be a good idea. Well, if you carve wood, you can actually make them there. Or somebody designed this chair, probably didn't manufacture it himself, but somebody designed it, so that was their thought, and then they passed it on to somebody else, and their thoughts have to go, how can we make this thing from their thoughts? And so you end up with actual things. Somebody had to sell it, somebody had to market it. So there's a whole chain of people having thoughts just about a simple thing like a chair. And our thoughts are regimented in automatic ways. We have to think in automatic ways. Because if we didn't, every time we saw a knife, a fork, or a chair, we'd have to think, what is this? How do we use it? How does it go on? I actually met somebody once who invited the friend round to the house for tea, and a 14-year-old female friend came round, and she sat round with us with a knife, fork, and she looked at it like it was an alien object. She didn't quite know that you could have a knife and a fork, and that they worked in conjunction with each other. And so I saw a 14-year-old girl acting like a baby. She got them in the hand the wrong way and everything. And it was just really weird. But everything we do for the first time is awkward. And even if we get a new job and we know exactly what we're doing, we go there and the first week we don't even know where the photocopier is. This and that is, you don't know who you're talking to, everything is this sort of raw thing. But after a week, you actually start doing things called associations. You start thinking, where have I done this before? How have I done this before? How did it work out last time? And within a week, you're back up to how good you were in your previous job and why they set you up. But we do that with everything in life. First of all, we have to learn it, and we have to feel very awkward doing it. So those of you who drive here, when you first got in the car, you had an accelerator pressed down and the clutch let out, and you told to put it in gear and you put this clutch in, and now you're going to have to do this movement. And while you're doing that, the instructor says, and now mirror, and you go, hang about. I'm doing this down, I'm doing this up, it's really tricky, and you want me to look in the mirror at the same time, you know, not on. But now you get in the car, you put it in gear, and you do that, and it's not a problem. When you first got in the car and you let the clutch out, you let go of all this. I nearly did it yesterday, just because the tick over was set so slow, it just didn't. But I challenge anybody here now, I'll give you 10 pounds, you can go in the car park and you can let your car do that down the road. Because at some point, the brain will cut in and then you'll drop the clutch in on your accelerator. But whilst you were doing it, there were so many thought processes which filled the little bit of the conscious brain you got. So the only reason we have a conscious part of the brain is to operate the unconscious part. This is our free will bit. I always point to trust. Doesn't matter where it is. Our conscious part of our brain holds 8 bits of data. So if I were to tell you my phone number, 1 digit at once now, and then carry on talking, you could either remember my phone number or listen to me. You can't do both. Okay? That's how little it takes to fill up the conscious brain. So virtually everything we do is done by our unconscious, where it looks at what's happening and it goes, what's the best thing I can do in this circumstance? And it looks for a program there to run. Okay, so all to do with association. So everything we do, even when we walk in a room, we're not aware of it, but we look for danger. First thing we do when we walk in a room, are there some dark corners where somebody can hide? Is there a spider that's falling? all sorts of bits and bobs. We're doing all that without knowing it at an unconscious level, because the unconscious job is to keep you alive. It's your survival system, it does everything. So it's running your heart, your lungs, your pH levels, it's running absolutely everything at the moment for you. This is why we can't break old habits very easily by consciously thinking about them. Because we've got 8 bits of data there that run quite slow, compared with your unconscious part of your mind, which has 100 trillion data points that can all connect to each other. And if you think that lotto, you have like 42 or 49 balls, and you can get all these combinations, and there's millions of combinations of 49 different numbers coming out 5 times. There's millions of combinations. So imagine 100 trillion connections being able to connect to each other. Any number. It's absolutely infinite. Your unconscious is capable of anything you want it to do. It can do anything. But it has to be directed, because it only runs the program you put in there. It is actually capable of making new programs. So if you talk to your unconscious, you can actually feed it with things and say, I've got this problem, and I wouldn't phrase it like that. Right? If you go to bed at night and you go, oh, all those problems today, all those problems, you'll go to sleep, you'll have nightmares, and you wake up in the morning and it'll go, don't forget you've got all those problems. Right? That's how it works.
Just a gentle reminder.
So if you go to bed at night and you actually, just before you go to sleep, you actually go, okay, today I have this challenge. I like to call it challenge when I go. I have this challenge. I need to find the answer to it. Okay? The moment you do that, your brain works in a different way. It is not now wanting to remind you you've got a problem. It wants to find the answer for you. If you treat your brain like a small child that absolutely adores you and is very intelligent, that's the best way to get on with it. Because it will actually go out and it will get you anything you want. Or it's trying its best to. Yeah? So if you say, I want to be able to fly just by flapping my arms, well, it can't get me that, but it'll try. Okay. But we get what we actually think about. Now, some people put all this down to visualization. It's not just about visualization, but quite often people are visual. So if you think about something in a visual way, then that's what you try to attract into your life. But for most of us, what we do is we think about the thing that we don't want to happen. And we think of it with all our might. We bring in the emotions and we bring in everything. And the best way to get something from the law of attraction is to add all your different senses. If you could picture a fantastic car on your picture board and you keep looking at it, eventually you might get that car. But if you actually believe it's coming, you can feel yourself driving it, you've worked out everything about it, you can do this with a house or a partner or whatever. If you feel it with your whole being, then it's more likely to happen. Because your unconscious is looking for all the opportunities to drive you towards getting that. That's how it works. It does the same if you think about the thing you don't want. It will still drive you to that. So I have most famous talk about chocolate biscuits. Okay? I do like this one because I've been talking about it again. You're on a diet and you're sat in your lounge and you sit there and suddenly you have this feeling of, oh, chocolate biscuits in the cupboard. Right? Now, at that second, you've actually told the mind what you want. You picture the chocolate biscuit, you can taste the chocolate biscuit, you can feel the texture of it in your mouth, and you've already felt some chocolate biscuit there. So just go there with me, just feel that chocolate biscuit in your mouth, okay? And then the next thing happens is, because that's come from your unconscious, it's just remind, something's triggered it off to go, oh, I'm looking hungry, I feel that way, and it's got chocolate biscuits. So you've got that wonderful feeling about chocolate biscuits, but now you flip it over because you're on a diet and you go, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. Now, the thing that we all should know, and hardly anybody knows, is the brain does not understand negatives. You can put as many negatives in as you like, it will not understand it. All it does is focuses on the thing that you have the feeling for. You have the good feeling of eating a chocolate biscuit. You're now trying to tell it that that was wrong, that that was untrue. But it knows it was true. It knows you want that chocolate biscuit. And you're now going, I mustn't, and remember the next few words, have the chocolate biscuit. Right? And then you sit there and you repeat this several times. I mustn't have the chocolate biscuit. And then you feel yourself getting up and you go, I don't know why I'm going to the kitchen. I don't really want that chocolate biscuit. And then you get to the cupboard and you open the door and you go, this is really bad. I shouldn't be having this chocolate biscuit. And then you go, well, I'll just have the one. Followed by, I won't eat the whole packet. Okay. You see where this is going? Good. I won't eat the whole packet. And you stand, you don't even get on the plate of things, you actually stand there on the cupboard, eating the chocolate biscuit, going, just one more. I won't eat all of them. Right? You are now programming yourself to eat the whole packet. And if you do this like me, if you get more than one packet of biscuits, which is why they sell them in 2 to 3, you know, for a pound or whatever, you get down to the last one of this one, and you go, well, at least I didn't start the next packet. Oh, no. Stop. Here we go. Say into the next packet. And it's, you only stop when you go sick, because now you, the actual feeling is, if I eat another one, I'm going to be sick, so I'm not. But the brain will try and get you anything you want out of life, including bad things. And because I've called it escaping the past, I'm going to work on relationships. Because this is the biggest thing about relationships. When a relationship ends, it's tidying up those loose ends, or you keep going back and revisiting them. If you finish with somebody else, it's easier to move on than somebody leaving you. I think we'd all agree with that. Although sometimes, even when we do that, if we leave somebody, we might then move on to somebody else and realise how nice the previous partner was, really, and that we've made a big mistake. In which case, we'll keep thinking back to that. But if somebody loves you, or you think they love you, and then one day they go, for whatever reason, there is unfinished business. Because the brain can't cope with this. They love me, now they don't. Or they were here, now they're not. And so you will continually keep going back to that. And what's happening is, if you have anything that's a repeat thing, so a dream, or a constant thought, or even just a feeling that comes on, sadness or whatever, because you're missing somebody, it's because you didn't finish it off. The same can happen with bereavement. There's a big difference between people who got to say goodbye and those that didn't. It's very difficult to move on if you didn't actually end up settling things before you lost somebody. Okay? And that's because anything you ask of the brain, it will continue searching for the answer for as long as you live. Even trivial things, it will keep looking for the answer. Now, this can be a bad thing when you try and escape the past, but it can also be used for a good thing. Has everybody heard of affirmations? Yeah. We're all out with that. There was a gentleman who took it a step further and called it affirmations, and I can't think of his name. And he came out with something and said that instead of constantly saying something over and over again until you believe it, what you can do is implant a question in it, and then the brain will go looking for the answer. So, what is it that keeps me slim? Now, the thing has to be true at the time you put it in there. This is why affirmations often don't work. If you look in the mirror and you're 28 stone, and I look in the mirror and go, I am so slim, oh, it's wonderful, I'm really slim. My unconscious will go, No, you're not, mate. Absolutely no, you're not. Or even if somebody's underconfident and they look in the mirror and go, I'm really confident, the bit that makes them underconfident will go, no, you're not. No, you shouldn't be. You don't deserve it. So there's a little bit of backlash. And you can say it thousands and thousands and thousands of times. Actually, the hope is the unconscious goes, give up. You keep saying it, it must be true, I'll take it on board. Doesn't happen very well. Okay? So if you do affirmations or affirmations, here's the last little bit of the puzzle. It has to be in the here and now. You have to actually believe the sentence that you're using. You have to feel the sentence with every fiber of your being. You have to use all your senses on it. And that starts to make it real. You don't have to then do it daily. But if you look in the mirror, who can look in the mirror and actually say, I love you to yourself? Is there anybody in here? One at the back of the room. And I'm going to use her as an example. This is my wonderful partner, Trudy. Trudy had an issue that she wanted to work on. I said, well, what I want you to do is go and look in the mirror and say, I love you. And she went, if I could do that, I went, well, it's very easy. Because you always like it. You feel a bit in the mirror and say, oh, sure, not anything. But we can't. We're incapable of doing that. Because we know ourselves we don't mean it, so we can't say it. So there's a sort of like, we wouldn't want to hear somebody else saying, I love you, if they didn't mean it, would we? So we can't do it to ourselves. So we stood in the sort of open doorway, and we, to get far from the mirror, we pressed in the doorway. And I said, okay, just have a look. And next thing, we cheers, and then broke down. And in fact, I ended up putting them in the traps in the doorway and taking a few of them, so she could say it. But once she got the ability to say it, she can now do it. But you have to break that bond of this program that's running that says, I'm not worthy, I don't love myself, why should I lie with it? And if you can't love yourself, who in the hell is going to love you? Because you're the best judge of your character, because you've been around this since day one. If you don't like yourself, you're actually giving off this vibration that says, I don't like myself. And you shouldn't either. That's the message you're sending. And we send this out all the time. There's such a big difference. At the end of the session, I'm going to take you through a technique that I did, which sends love out right down in the universe and sends it back to you. And I did this on the stand at Lincoln about 11 months ago. And I opened my eyes from doing it, and Trudy walked into my life.
Yeah.
And it's doing with me. So it does work. I wasn't sending it out to attract the partner, I was just sending unconditional love to everybody in the room. And somehow it just changed the vibration of giving. We just felt it, didn't we? Right, sorry, I said I was going to do an exercise earlier. So, I don't want you to pick something really sad, but I just want you to think of something sad and go down. Put your shoulders around you, put yourself, and just, weigh on yourself. Just think of something not too sad, just slightly sad. Okay? Now, I want you to then pull your shoulders back, put your head up in the air, and try and continue thinking of something sad. Can anybody carry on doing that?
No.
Okay. While you're there, then think of something happy. Okay. Think of something really happy. And now try and keep that happiness while you fold back into that sad shape. Try and keep happy. Come on. Try and keep happy. Okay. Everybody back up. Because what happens to us, this is your mind-body connection. Everything you think about in your mind forces these chemicals around the system. It forces out all the associations with everything else that's ever been bad in your life, or good in your life. You go into that mode. But it affects your body. Now, it it's not as exaggerated as we've just done. So when I said there's a person on the phone, actually when I do that and I think of something sad, you can actually tell I actually go into that. And I'm not a good actor. I mean, I just go into that sad thing. Because I've changed my body shape, as soon as you change your body shape, you're actually saying to your body, when was my body this shape last time? And he goes, when I was really sad. And he sat there. Right? So there's a bit of a clue in it that from your body shape of how you feel. So if you're feeling sad, you can literally just change it by altering your posture. If you go into a phobia or a shock of any sort, you can actually just go, well, how am I posed at the moment? Well, what happens when I move me over? What happens when I do this? I'm going to give you another technique there. Okay, and then we'll do this bullet ball again. Okay, I want you to think of something that you don't like, something that you, when it comes to mind, you keep focusing on it and you can't get it out of your head. Okay? Because we're going to show you how to get it out. What I want you to do is I want you to put fingers up in front of you like that. Okay, and you're going to focus past them to whatever you can see in front of you, one of these posters or something, and you're going to then just move your fingers out and around, and you're going to put them to the side of you, and you're going to try and see how far back you can get. Just move them or waggle a little bit and just see how far back you can get while still looking forward. You should now have a view of 180 degrees or thereabouts. Okay? So now I want you to try and think of that thing that bothers you. Can anybody think of that thing? No. Okay, quick hands up. Don't think of that thing. Now, on that basis, you'll be thinking about that thing, right? Because I just said don't think about that thing. So always remember that if you're thinking of the negative side of something, that's what your unconscious thinks you want, it will try and get it for you. So particularly at the end of a relationship, if you, or it's, you think it's heading towards the end of a relationship, if that's what you concentrate on, oh, I hope you don't break up, I hope you don't break up. Take out the, I hope, you break up, you break up, you break up. Okay. Now, top prize here for anybody who can say, what is the exact opposite breaking up? Get together. Huh? And how different is getting together with breaking up? Absolutely the complete opposite. And so if you're with a partner you want to stay with, and it's going to that point where you just kneel each other all the time, just try and go back to when you first got together, how different that was. And if you start acting in that way, so the brain goes to, well, how was it when we first got together? How can I get that back? How can I be like I first, when we were first together? Your brain will now look for every nice thing that first happened when we got together. And it will be looking for that. Now, you cannot change other people. You can only change yourself. I'm going to now contradict myself. When you change other people. Because they react to you. Because in life, it's all about perception. Whatever we believe is happening becomes true. Mainly because the brain will keep looking for more opportunities for that thing. So it's a negative that people look for it. So for instance, somebody who thinks the whole world hates them, and I met somebody yesterday you thought that. And I said, well, I don't. So now you can't believe that anymore, because you can say everybody in the world hates the pop on Stephen. Which blew a mind. So if we think everybody in the world hates us, we will then look for evidence to prove that we're right. Because we wouldn't have that thought if it wasn't true. Because you can't hold on to a thought if you think it's not true. You can only hold on to it if you think it's true, however much it hurts you. So if you think everybody in the world hates me, there's not a lot there that's nice about things, but there is a solidity to the fact that you're right. So you now look for everything anybody says to you, to match your belief system. And as soon as they say something, you filter it in such a way that if they say anything nice, you don't hear it. Or you throw it out, or you dismiss it, or you think it's sarcastic. But anything they say bad to you, you take on board because it matches your belief system. So your perception is self-perpetuating. It just keeps going around. Oh yeah, everybody hates me. Oh, I proved it now. So one thing I would say is, what other people think of you is none of your damn business. Okay? It's absolutely nothing to do with you because you have no control over what other people think. You can be the best person in the world and somebody will find something to slag off. In fact, the better you are, the more they'll try and find something to slag off because they see that jealousy there and they go, well, they can't be perfect, so let's find something, let's exaggerate it, make out they're horrible people. So, in fact, the nicer you are, the more people will slag you off. So you can't win with this. So all you can win with is not taking any notice. What would people think of? Because I'm going to blow your mind now, because what you think other people think of you, whose brain does it come out of?
Your own.
It's not what they're thinking of you. Unless you're a clairvoyant, in which case you'd be downstairs the other side of the table, right? You have no idea of other people's thoughts. In fact, I'll tell you all this, you're all crap at mind. Because when you think that somebody doesn't like you, you're actually projecting, I don't like myself. Therefore, nobody else can like me. That's what you're projecting. Somebody who is confident really doesn't give a damn what anybody thinks of them. Because their thought is, everybody should love me because I'm a wonderful person. And they're confident. Or they go, I don't care what anybody thinks because I'm a wonderful person. And if they don't become wonderful, they're wrong. And this is why sensitive people have more depression and problems and so on, because they're trying to think about the other person's feelings and then deal with these feelings that they think the other person has. But you're wrong. Whatever you guess, you'll be wrong. So I said to this to a friend I've got who's absolutely paranoid about it, thinks everybody hates her. Thinks everybody's out to sort of get revenge on her. If somebody doesn't answer a text within 2 minutes, then they've fallen out with her and so on. And she came around one day, and I keep saying to her, look, you're particularly good at mind reading, you're particularly bad at reading my mind. Because she'll tell me stuff as a therapist, I hear all sorts of stuff. And she'll go, well, you'll judge me when you hear this. And I go, no, I'm not in the business of judging. What I want to hear is what happens, and then I'll do it. So I don't like judgments. So she came around one day and she said, oh, you think you're a smart ass, don't you? She said, I think this friend of mine doesn't like me. And the other day she actually told me, this is not my thoughts going into her thought. She told me I'm horrible. And I went, just a minute then. If your friend says to you that you're horrible, what does that make her? Right? Because a nice person would never say, you're horrible. They might point out something you've done and say, oh, I wish you didn't do that because that makes me feel terrible. Right? But if her friend said, you're horrible, that's what her friend thinks of herself. So for a start, you can't read anybody's mind, so you can't think what other people think. And even when they tell you, that's about them. So what does it matter what people think of you? Right? Because it's never right. Okay. You got that? That takes a lot of thinking about, because it's all about your thoughts. You see, and everything is our thoughts. But it takes us to turn them into reality. So there are techniques that you can do that stop it happening. But you don't want a technique that's happened once the feelings come on. You've got that terrible feeling and now you're trying to sort of break it off. Because that's just a tantrum measure. If you work with your brain in the right way, you actually get to the point where it removes those associations. So instead of feeling anxious, I'll use the example of Antidorus. This is made of Antidorus, it's not real. You have an Antidorus that used to smack you around the head when you were young, if you didn't have kids. He just smack you around the head for no apparent reason. So this is now a sort of like, every time she's about, you have to sort of like, you know, when's it going to happen, you're sort of ducking. And she used a really strong perfume. She's been dead 20 years, but somebody walked past wearing that perfume. You are not consciously aware that that is the case. All of a sudden, there'll be this, oh my God, there's like, I'll have to duck in here. Right? And then you go, why am I here like this? And then you go, why am I thinking about Auntie Doris? She's been dead 20 years. And then it all connects up. But that has formed such a big neural pathway in your brain that it's an automatic process. It just goes to that. Auntie Doris, anxiety, smell of Auntie Doris, anxiety. Anxiety, anything could happen, oh my God, what's happening now? Right? So you're always in danger mode. And what people don't realise is when we stress ourselves out with our thoughts, we actually tear ourselves in half literally. Right? Because what happens is we are only supposed to have fright or flight for a few seconds. So the saber-toothed tiger leaps out at you from behind a rock, and you go, oh my goodness me, shall I stand here and pretend I haven't seen him? Or shall I run like hell? Or shall I pick this rock up and back it down the head? And most of us will go, run! And so we'll run off. Now when we run off, what happens is our survival system says, okay, what do we need a lot of? Well, we need a lot of energy, we need a lot of adrenaline, we need mainly in the legs. We'll have a bit in the arm so we can pump, right? And we'll have the vision that actually takes down so I can see a tree or a rock to hide behind or a chasm to fall in or something that I get out of it. So most of your vision goes, you get all this strength in your body and an anger sort of thing that's rushing around you, but your stomach will shut down, the bits of the vision you don't need will shut down, your immune system shuts down. And all this happens in a split second. So you've got half your body on sugar, you've got half your body on 100 mile an hour, and that's all right for 30 seconds. Escape the saber-toothed tiger, stand behind the rock, and then just carry on doing what you're doing. Because you say, well, we were primitive, we didn't want it. That's amazing. That's great if you do it for 30 seconds every few months. But when we stress ourselves out with these thoughts of the past, we actually keep going back there, and we actually feel all the feelings that we felt the last time. Very quickly, part of the brain and how it works. Your memory system works on the basis that you record something at the time. You can't record all of it. It does take most things in that you can't recall. Right. So sometimes I take people back in time and they'll tell me what dress they were wearing. They can't remember the incident before I take them back. But then they describe the room and the dressing room. So we did take in a lot of details, but we attach it with all the facts and feelings and everything else. So if you actually go in your head and you recall that story, you refresh it. This is why it's not great to get people to tell a tragic story over and over again. And it does change. So if police come and take a thing you've been mugged and they take a report, they'll take it straight after it's happened. If they took one 6 months later, it would be entirely different. So I get beat up by a 3 foot guy, right? And he mugs me, and I go home and I think, oh, anyone know he's 3 foot guy. He becomes this big.
Yeah.
He has shoulders this big. And I tell it, and I get a lot more sympathy. So the next time I tell it, there's two of them. Okay, but the feelings are still there, because I got mugged. And there's also the anger and everything else, and there's the embarrassment of being mugged by a 3 foot-high guy. So I continue telling the story. I change the story, but the feelings are still the same with it. But you can also change the feelings when you tell the story. So if you tell the story without the emotion, suddenly it has no hold over it. Because when it goes back, it goes in a different place. So the memory comes out, And if you tell it exactly as it was, it goes back in the cell. So you've got the same feelings, the same story. If you change the story and put it back, you now overwrite the original story. This is how counselling works. You go and tell somebody the same story for 2 years, you go back on the last day and you go, I can't tell you this anymore, I'm bored with it. Oh, you killed me! That's the process. You're actually doing it because every time you tell the person the story again, you take some of the emotion out. And they help you take some of the emotion out, and you take a bit more out next time, but you're always putting it back with a different one. So, that's what you need to do to escape the past, is you need to tidy the loose ends up. So when you revisit the past and you get this thing that's bothering you, all you need to do is say, okay, you keep giving me this message. I have to learn from this message. That is why we get messages. That's why we get the repetition of things. Because we've not tidied up the loose end. Can you imagine not tidying your kitchen up every time you use it? Right. And it's the same in the brain. We have to tidy everything up. So when that message comes again, go, okay, you're telling me I've got a message to learn. What I want you to do is, I'm going to revisit it this time. I'm going to analyse it properly. And then I want you to throw it away. And that's what you do. You just go back there. You analyse it properly. So it's not who to blame or whatever it is. What can I learn from that? If similar circumstances came again, that I would actually do things differently. Because you can't go back and change that. But you can change how it happens again. And quite often we'll repeat things. You know, the person that's been married 7 times and then go, well, all men are, is not right, because not all men are like that. But the 7 that she's picked so far have been, right? And she carries on not analysing it, the 8th one will be just the damn same. Right? So go back and see what there is to learn from things before you go to 31. Now, what time is it? In a quarter to, that's fine. We can do 2 techniques then. Okay. We'll do one of love at the end, but I'm going to get you to escape the past now. Okay? Everyone want to do that? So, I want you to take something not too traumatic. Right? Because when I deal with people, if I open a box on anything, I put the lid on at the end and it's empty. Right? And I have to know, I have to have time to deal with it. So I don't want you raising anything today that you don't quite like to finish off. Right? So I just want you to go into that thought of something that's bothered you, but not too much. Okay? Nothing really tragic. So take that thought. And I just want you to say, I accept where I am now. Because you're all sat in this room listening to me talk. And any time in your life, if you took a left or a right turn somewhere else, you wouldn't be here now. And even if you've got something horrendous in your past, if you don't accept it, you can't clear it. It's like, you know, an object and you go, right, I'll throw this bottle away, but you pretend it's over there. I can't throw it away from over there. I can only throw it when it's in my hand. So if you have an illness or something that bothers you or any problem like that that you want to throw away, you have to accept that it is what it is. You don't have to like it. You just have to accept that here and now you have that issue and you want to get rid of it. As simple as that. Once you've accepted that, I want you to look for the learning from it. But look for the learning from it from a positive aspect. What good can I get from this? In everything, there's some good comes from it. Even terrible things are some good if there's a learning aspect to it. And I live my whole life now from something I invented about 3 or 4 months ago, which is that life is just a series of lessons about life. That's it. We're just here to learn and have a better life from the learning. And anything we don't learn just keeps coming back and coming back in different formats and keeps coming back until we learn the lesson. So why don't we just analyse what we've already got, learn the lesson, we don't have to have it again. It doesn't have to go back again. So accept where you are now, look for what positive lesson could come out of this. What wouldn't you do again? What would you do differently again? And as soon as you've got that, you can say, okay, unconscious, we're going to have a chat now. Right, is everybody you fit enough to stand up for a few seconds, 30, 40 seconds, okay? What I'd like you to do, what I'd like you to do is just put your feet together a bit so you're just on that balance point of swaying there. Okay? I'd like you to look, you can either close your eyes or you can look somewhere over my head on the wall or somewhere that's just above eye level. And I'm just going to have a quick chat with your unconscious. So I'm going to thank all of you, all your unconsciouses, for actually doing everything it does for you. It's done, it's worked your heart and lungs and your pH levels, and it's repaired every injury you've ever had. And everything it's ever done has been in your best interest, whether you think that or not. It's only ever done as little as it can to harm you, and it will harm you if there's something more harmful than protection. A bit like tripping you up to say you're going in the road. So I want to thank your unconscious for everything it's done for you in your life. And it never gets thanked. I also want your unconscious to realise now that you understand more that it's running your life and that you need to be in control of it. And so there's some things in your life that you would like to change. But we're not blaming the unconscious for this, because the unconscious only runs the programmes it's given. So at some point, if it's running a program you do not like now, you install it. It doesn't get the blame for this. So thank you, unconscious, for running that program, even if I don't like it anymore. But we're going to chat at some point to get rid of it. All I want now is from your unconscious, I want it to make itself known to you. And truly, can you just report? And what I'd like it to do, I'd like to make it a significant thing that gives you a yes. Now, it can choose anything it likes for a yes, or you can instruct it to give you something like this, push you forward or push you back again. Okay, side to side, or twist your head or any of that sort of thing. Okay, you can stay there truly and do it with us. So, just close your eyes for a second. I'll just talk a bit softer. And what I'd like to say is, I'd just like your unconscious now to recognise the fact that you recognise it. And I'd like to make you aware and just give you a sign for yes, however that feels. And as soon as it's giving you a sign for yes, please sit down. If you don't get a sign, I'll help you. Now, you're not trying to do anything there. You are allowing your unconscious to give you a message. So I want you to totally relax, let your unconscious give you a sign, whether it's wobbling, pulling forward, backwards, forwards, twist of the head, nod of the head, let you twitch in a muscle, anything, just become aware of your whole body, but don't try and do anything, just wait for it out. So I'm going to ask your unconscious to give you that sign and give you now for yes, that it exists, and it's showing you that it's. Take a seat, I'll chat to you about the individual later and we'll get through that. Okay, quite amazing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Now, if you do that with a pendulum, you actually sort of think, well, I think I might be cheating with you. But if you have your body suddenly go, like, you think, what? So you have this unconscious, and like I say, it's running your whole life. But you cannot interrupt it. But you must talk to it in a certain way. And this is the bit that's absolutely unique to my business. It's about, you don't have to go to trance, you don't have to meditate or anything like that. They're great things if you can do them, but lots of people can't meditate. Anybody can trance, by the way. But if you can't meditate or anything, this is just a very simple way of being able to say to your unconscious, right, I'd like you to do this, but you have to bargain with it. if it's got a system running, even if it gives you severe anxiety and has done for 40, 50 years, I've had people go over that before that. But you have to say to it that that safety barrier, because they think it thinks it's a safety barrier, if it's made you anxious and shy, then you don't get in situations that might hurt you. So it's given you what it thinks is the best thing to protect you. But how about not being shy? Wouldn't that be better than being shy and having to have a protective blanket to save you from being confident? So you have to talk to them in such a way, and you ask for yeses. You never ask the unconscious for a no. That's one of my techniques. Because it's a bit like a very clever but naughty child. So if you say to the naughty child in the wrong tone, "Would you like an ice cream?" It'll go, "No!" And once you've said no, you go, "But it's an ice cream with it." "No! Not having an ice cream. No, I don't want an ice cream. No, I'm going to never want an ice cream again." Right. And your unconscious is just as I'm saying. Right. It will back up what it's doing. I don't really go for the ego on all this stuff. You either run programs that help you, or you run programs that aren't helpful for you. And then we can label them how we like, that it's the ego. But to me, it's just something you learned at one stage that you thought was right, but it's not. The moment you stop believing the thing that's messing your life up, it changes your life. You cannot hold on to something you no longer believe. And I can spend the next 2 hours telling you that Father Christmas exists, but because you believed it once and then you didn't, you can't go back there again. Those neural pathways going back to the Father Christmas. There might have been a little bit of time where you actually had to pretend you believed it because you wouldn't get present otherwise. I think I had a year for that. But that's how the brain works. So, does anybody want to do the look technique?
Yep.
Okay, right. What I'd like you to do is just get yourself relaxed in your chair. And I'd like you to think of it, because we talk about lots of negative things, we're going to go over the we're going to go over to positive stuff now, okay? Because I'd like you to leave on a high. So this is a technique I developed and I've learned bits from places. I never know where I've learned anything from. So forgive me if I don't actually quote sources. Because I read so much, and then sometimes something else comes along that joins in with the thing I learned 5 months ago that I've forgotten. And the two together make a wonderful thing. So I can't actually attribute this to anybody. But there is a method where you can just relax now, close your eyes as preferable, and I just want you to think of somebody or something that you love absolutely unconditionally. And I want you to look for where that resides in your body. So look for that feeling in your body, that love. Just get in touch with it. And as you notice it, it will either intensify or move, or you just become more aware of it. So just focus on that area of love. What I'd like you to do now is to start to swirl it around so it starts to have bigger spaces in between all the little particles of love. You swirl it around in your body and start to expand it and expand it and expand it. Just notice how it's filling you all with love. Absolutely every little bit of you now is filling up with love. It's almost like it's trying to burst out your skin. And just feel that love you contain inside. Just double that feeling and then double it again. Just feel that wonderful feeling of love. Love you. And as you feel that feeling of love, I want you to try and take it outside your body. So now move it outside your body and fill this room up. And what you'll notice is, as you send that love out into this room, that unconditional love, it'll actually merge with everybody else that's doing the same. And for those that need love, they'll be able to absorb this love from you. This is what brought Trudy into our life. So send that love out to fill this whole room up. And now I want you to take a big leap now, and I want you to fill the whole of Lincolnshire and Nottinghamshire up. And I want you to spread it right around the country. And I want you to imagine now you're actually stood on the top of the globe and you're spreading it in every single direction. And it's touching everybody on the planet as it goes around. As it goes around, it's now meeting under the globe, and it's all rushing back in every single direction again, and it's coming back towards you, and it's coming back now, with all the love joining from everybody in the planet. Just feel it entering your body, feel that bliss and joy. Wonderful feeling. Just enjoy that feeling. Just understand that sometimes we shut our hearts off to love because somebody hurts us. And when we shut our heart off to love, it dies. And we might think we're keeping out any further pain, but we're not trapping in pain. The only good beating heart is an open. And the more we send love out, it's like sowing seeds. We can't expect it all to grow, and we shouldn't expect it to grow, and we shouldn't expect a return from it. But the more love we send out, the more will come back in. And it comes back in tenfold. And it's this stuff that you can't give away. Love and joy, the more you give it away, the more you have. And you keep giving it away, and you know, you've got bucket loads now. And then you start giving it away, but you get more back, and you go, oh, right, I've got to share it with more people. That's how you get love in your life. That's how you stay. Right, you've been a lovely audience. I've been sitting right. Wide awake, everybody. Thank you.